Please welcome Dean Thompson.
The title for the fastest living thing on the planet gets to go to the peregrine falcon, capable of speeds of over 200 miles per hour, and that's in a dive. And they first got an inkling of how fast the peregrine falcon could go back during World War II, when there was a fighter pilot practicing dive bombing strafing runs over a lake. And every time he'd go over the lake, there was a flock of ducks in the lake, and the ducks would be, wah, wah, and he was like, that was fun, I'm going to do it again. So he starts diving down, and he looks out the window, and he sees a peregrine falcon passing him, going faster than his airplane. And he figured it was going about 180, 200 miles per hour. And the falcon was not racing, it was going after those ducks, because that's what peregrine falcons eat. They don't eat squirrels, they don't eat rats, they don't eat fish, they don't eat snakes. The only thing peregrine falcons eat are other birds, and the cool part is they catch them in the air. So imagine you got a pigeon flying along, out of the sky, drops a peregrine falcon at 180 miles an hour and hits that pigeon. Yeah, you're talking shredded tweet. Sometimes the falcon will grab it. Other times it'll take its talons and just smack it. And as it hits it, the bird starts tumbling through the air. The peregrine falcon will double back around, pick the bird out of the air. If the bird's not dead yet, the falcon will take its beak, which has an extra little tooth on it, and bite the bird right in the back of the neck, which severs the spinal cord. And now the falcon can pluck the feathers and devour the flesh of its victim. Doesn't that give you a warm, fuzzy feeling? Yeah. It does me. Now, this awesome avian predator was endangered, and what made it endangered was a substance called dichloral diphenyl trichloroethane, otherwise known as DDT. And DDT was a fantastic pesticide. It was wonderful. It was great at getting rid of mosquitoes, in particular in areas where there was a lot of malaria. In fact, some people say they probably couldn't have built the Panama Canal if it wasn't for DDT getting rid of the malaria. The problem is DDT didn't break down. It didn't decompose. And so it moved through the food chain, and it would build up in apex predators, top of the food chain predators, like peregrine falcons and bald eagles and ospreys and brown pelicans and things like that. And it would get stored in their fat. And then when they had to lay eggs, they would metabolize their fat, and the DDT, which is now DDE, would come out. And what it did is it didn't kill the birds, but it inhibited their ability to make an eggshell around their eggs. And so they ended up with really super thin eggs. I mean, so thin that I've held peregrine falcon eggs and I could just go, and they would have squished. And so you have thin eggs in an eggshell like that in a nest, a mama peregrine sits on them, scrambled eggs in the nest, okay? So, scrambled eggs in the nest lower the reproductive potential of these birds. And this happened through the late 40s, into the 50s, into the 60s, and their population plummeted. And as a result, there was a bunch of people that weren't too happy about this. And so they banded together, people like Tom Cade from Ithaca, New York, and Bill Burnham and Bill Heinrich in Fort Collins, Colorado, and Brian Walton up in the Santa Cruz Predatory Bird Group, all banded together and ended up making this organization known as the Peregrine Fund, whose mission was to save the peregrine falcon and other birds of prey. And they were going to do it in two ways. One, they wanted to get rid of DDT, okay? And this actually was already started kind of in the late 60s when Rachel Carson came out with her book, Silent Spring, and it kind of raised the consciousness of people and that DDT was bad. So in 1970, they passed a law saying you can't use DDT in the United States anymore. Great law. People in the United States, great, no more DDT. But they said you couldn't use it. So they kept making it, though, and they made it, and they sold it to South America and Latin America because there was a demand for it down there. And here in the United States, we're like, whoa, yay, no more DDT. But the falcons kept getting the DDT. And the way they got it is because the little birds they would eat would fly down to Mexico, Latin America, get the DDT there like DDT pills on wings and fly up north, and the falcons would eat it. And so finally they said, look, okay, you can't make it. You can't sell it. You just stop with the DDT. And so there's a lot of companies that had a lot of extra DDT, so what were they going to do with it? They had to get rid of it. And so like a company, Montrose Chemical Company, down in Los Angeles, just dumped it into the sewer, and it went out over into the ocean just off Palos Verdes, where there's a giant DDT dump. And for decades, bald eagles and brown pelicans on the Channel Islands had really hard times laying their eggs. The other way they were going to help the peregrine falcon, other than getting rid of DDT, was through captive breeding. And that's where they would take birds from in captivity and breed them, and then take their young and release them out into the wild. And they would either foster them in the few remaining wild nests that were out there, or sometimes they even put them in prairie falcon nests, or they would release them out into the wild at a release site called a hack site. And when I first got caught wind of this whole effort to save the peregrine falcon was back in 1979. And this is where I kind of enter this story that I'm starting. And in 1979, I had an ornithology field trip over at Morro Rock. And I was there and we were looking at Morro Rock. And the professor was telling me about this guy named Merlin Felton who lived on Morro Rock and watched the peregrine falcons. And I was like, what? That's a job? You get paid to watch falcons? I went in. How do I do this? I want to get involved? So in 1982, when I graduated from Cal Poly, I was able to get a job at Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, where a new pair of peregrine falcons were nesting on Diablo Rock. So I sat on the point and looked northwest into the wind at Diablo Rock, and I watched the peregrine falcons there, and I watched them go through courtship, and I watched them lay their eggs, and I watched them break their eggs, and then we were able to get two young, and we took a zodiac out there, and we were able to put two young birds in there, and I watched them feed the young and raise those young, and I watched one bird learn how to fly, and I watched the second one try and learn how to fly and get hit by the northwest wind and landed in the ocean, and then the gulls ate it. And so I was like, well, you know, that's nature. And then the following year, I got to do a release site up in Kings Canyon National Park, just outside of there, where we released three falcons out into the wild, and it failed miserably because two falcons got eaten by golden eagles, and another bird landed in the river and nearly drowned. And that was a story I actually told here, but didn't get recorded because we had technical difficulties, and who knows, maybe I'll tell it again. Anyway, so what I was finding out after 2 years of working with peregrine falcons is like releasing peregrine falcons is hard. I mean, first of all, the young birds are dumb as a post. They don't know what's dangerous and what isn't. They're just little kids running around, flying around. They don't know how to fly. They don't know how to land. And then you have got things like eagles and great horned owls that want to eat them. And then you have like things like foxes and pine marten and raccoons that want to steal their food. And so you're trying to keep that all in order. And then setting the sites up isn't always easy because usually they're on cliffs. And so you got to climb up there and rig it up there. And some of the places we had to use like concrete, but to get the concrete in there, we had to backpack bags of concrete in there. And it was a dry camp, so you had to backpack the water in there as well. And then usually the hack site would last anywhere from 2 to 3 months. So you're basically either camping or living out of your car for about 2 or 3 months at a time. And there's long, tedious days. And then there's days filled with high anxiety as you're trying to keep these birds safe and fed. But the people I got to work with, we all were united, banded together. That's common goal to see wild, free-flying falcons. And you know, and the places we got to be that were spectacular scenery, and to see these falcons when we finally did have success, and I did have success, when they're out there and the amazing acrobats that they are in the air, it's just breathtaking. And so that whole Kings Canyon thing, the following year, we were contracted to release peregrine falcons again. So we went back to Kings Canyon. And of course, everybody who was there was like, huh, you boys are back to feed more eagles, huh? Well, we moved the site to another location, and we learned how to deal with the eagles, and we successfully released three falcons into the Kings River drainage. And then the following year, we expanded it and had another release site, and we released six that year. And over the course of the next 4 years, we released over 25, 30 falcons in the Kings River drainage, and now there are falcons nesting in every fork of the Kings River drainage. And then I got to go to the Tetons, the Grand Tetons, and I released peregrine falcons up there, three successfully released up in the Tetons, and went back to Morro Rock. I actually got to live my dream of being at Morro Rock, and I watched the peregrine falcons there, and we released two young, fostered them into that nest there, and that was successful. And I met my wife there, and I got married. And then after we got married, well, we had a honeymoon. And what was our honeymoon? Well, we did a hack site. We did a release site down in San Diego on Point Loma, and successfully released three falcons out there as well. And so now, when we look around California, things have kind of changed, because back in 1972, right after they passed that second law about DDT, there was only 3 to 4 pairs of peregrine falcons in all of California that we knew about. Okay, there might have been 1 or 2 others that we didn't know about, but 3 to 4 that we knew about. East of the Mississippi River, there were no peregrine falcons. They were extinct, okay? But now in California, we have about 300 pairs of peregrine falcons. East of the Mississippi River, many more. In fact, they say in North America, there's close to 2,000 to 3,000 pairs of peregrine falcons. In fact, there's so many peregrine falcons now that they've taken the peregrine falcon off the endangered species list. I mean, we always hear about animals becoming endangered, yet how often do we get to hear about animals becoming unendangered? And yet this is a success story, and it's a success story because people banded together to pass meaningful environmental regulations, and they rolled up their sleeves to help this bird recover. And I feel kind of honored to be able to be a part of that legacy. Thank you.